Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Geek Life HQ! I'm Justin with an E.
Justin with an I.
I'm Matt. I'm here for the intro.
Matt's here for the intro because we got a couple special episodes. Episodes. In today's episode, we have an interview for you that is so tantalizing, so delicious, so yummy. You're going to want to listen to it more than once. We have Yeah. We got Penelope Spheres, director of Wayne's World, Black Sheep, The Little Rascals.
Nice.
Decline of Western Civilization for all you metalheads. And just generalized
Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, Beverly Hillbillies nice. Too. Just generally awesome human person. Dude, the stories are great, so take a listen. And thank us.
Fucking sweet, dude. I'm excited to hear this one. So it'll be a first for me too, baby.
Yeah. So
you should. We definitely share a moment, her and I.
Oh, so yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's cool, dude. Fuck you for doing it without me, but I'm excited that it's gonna be under our name.
Yeah. So yeah. So give it a listen, guys, and enjoy.
The following podcast features topics discussed by geeks or under the supervision of nerds. Accordingly, Geek Life and its producers must insist that no one attempt to recreate or reenact any of the topics or bad impressions performed on this show.
Welcome to Geek Life HQ. I'm Justin with an E.
I'm Justin with an I.
And on the show today, we have a great interview. We got Penelope Spheres, the director of some of the greatest comedies in cinema history, including Beverly Hillbillies, Little Rascals, Black Sheep, and of course, our favorite, Wayne's World. She also created the documentary series Decline of Western Civilization. Penelope, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. We're so excited.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy to be here with y'all.
Oh, we are so excited. So we're just going to jump right in, and we want to talk about Wayne's World because we love Wayne's World. We reference Wayne's World probably every episode. If you listen to us, there's a Wayne's World reference.
Oh, my God.
There. So
yeah, it's our favorite movie.
Yeah. So.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, so how does it feel to be the director of one of the greatest pop culture movies of all time?
I don't know. I feel fortunate that, you know, we got the people together that we did with the right chemistry at the right time. You know, I mean, it's kind of a anomaly. It's a unique one-off kind of deal when something like that happens, you know. And so we, in my opinion, let's put it this way. I cast my boyfriend in the movie as one of the guitar players in Cassandra's band.
No kidding.
Okay.
Yeah, my boyfriend George, and after Wayne's World, he called me the waitress that got lucky because I used to be a waitress. Oh my God.
Yeah, I did read
but
that. Yeah, you worked at Denny's.
Huh?
You worked at Denny's while you're putting yourself through school.
Yeah, I did that, and Denny's and IHOP. But yeah, George, he's not my boyfriend anymore because you don't talk to me that way, Mister. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Definitely.
I can't blame you. No more moons over my hand.
That's funny.
So, yeah, and then, Justin, I know you had the next question there.
Yeah, who got to choose Bohemian Rhapsody for that iconic scene in the car there? Is it true that Dana Carvey didn't know the words of the song?
Okay, I'm going to ask you if you could do me a favor because I like to do one question at a time. And I like both of those questions a lot. So to start with, whose idea was it to put Bohemian Rhapsody in a film? I must confess that when I got the original script, before I was even hired, Bohemian Rhapsody was written into the film.
Okay.
Which made me understand the characters of Wayne and Garth a little better because they thought of themselves as headbangers, you know, metalheads. But, you know, metalheads, they're not really Queen fans. They're more like Judas Priest and Maiden or Sabbath, you know. But they were kind of like poser metalheads, and that's funny if you ask me. And so it was in the script originally, and I No, it was Mike's idea. I love to give him credit for it, but at the same time, I have to take a little credit for the way it was shot, because I had to argue with those guys to sit in that car and bang their heads like that over and over again. It was an uncomfortable thing for them to have to do that for like 3-4 hours, you know, and Mike was getting all grumpy going, I need some Advil and this isn't funny, can we stop, you know, and I'm like, dude, it's funny, I know it's funny. And I had actually filmed that same scene in a different movie earlier in 1987. I did a movie called Dudes that had Flea in it and John Cryer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in that movie, there's that scene with them banging their heads to Hava Nagila.
Okay.
And so, you know, I guess the success of the scene can be accredited to Mike and me because of the way I filmed it. But the fact is, you know, all it does is make people happy. So we don't give a shit who did it. You know,
oh,
what I mean? Whose credit it is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it definitely makes people happy. I mean, it's one of those things where you can see anywhere in the world, people in their car who are listening to it will
oh,
headbang
yeah.
to that.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So my kids do it.
I'm one of them.
Yeah. I know. We did the movie that, and it did really well, you know, here in the U.S. of A. The marketing guys at Paramount said, don't think it's going to do really well in the rest of the world because they're not going to get all those jokes. And so I said, I think they will get them because, it you know, swing is universal, excuse me.
Oh.
No Way is universal. And so Paramount made up a little booklet. I've never seen one, but I heard that they, like in Japan, they did a translation of all the slang in Wayne's World so that people would understand it better. But anyway, it did well internationally.
That's great. That makes the second one even funnier than with all the Cantonese translations.
There you go, yeah.
So yeah, and then the follow-up was that, because we've heard Dana Carvey didn't know the lyrics to the song, so is he
oh,
really...
Oh, right, that second he... question, thank you, sorry.
Oh, no worries.
Well, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody is a freaky song, and it's got so many different parts and so many different levels to it, and I wanted to film the whole thing, it was like 8 minutes or something, you know? And so... I mean, I don't know if were on camera and the song started, if I would, after all these years and all these times hearing it, would know all the lyrics, because it's just a weird song with a lot of changes and everything. But to answer your question, yeah, there's a couple times where Dana blew it on the sync, you know, on the lip sync, but I thought it was funny, and it always gets a laugh.
Oh, yeah.
That he... You know, that he tries to hit the lyrics and he misses. He gets a really good laugh.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. You got to love it when you're watching that scene, because you could see that he's lip syncing it. Just the face that he makes while he's doing it makes the scene just so much great. Yeah.
Oh, I know. Dana was so incredible with his face. He could make these goofy little perfectly Garth looks, you know, and... He made the character very layered and very deep, and the two of those guys argue so funny over here again. Well, who the hell cares whose credit it is? But they argue over. Mike says that Gareth character was his friend so and so, and Dana says that the Garth character was his brother so and so. You know, and so they want to both take credit for it. You know. But I personally don't care as long as people love them, and they do.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
I saw somebody sent me a meme lately that had like Batman and Darth Vader standing next to each other, and on the words on the subtitles said like Party On Wayne, and then it said Party On Darth.
I love that.
So, so iconic.
Yeah.
Two characters we talk about all the time too. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh definitely.
We're geeky. We're all over the place.
You're like, you guys are like big little kids.
Basically,
yes,
yeah.
Of course.
Definitely. I mean, because you know we cover Wayne's World, we cover rock music, we cover comic books, we cover movies and TV shows and everything. We're all over the place.
You have a fun life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Gotta
yeah,
keep
I mean,
it fun.
If we don't want to make money at it, yeah.
That's funny. My daughter has three kids, and she is married to a musician who's in the Cult, the band The Cult.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he does keys in The Cult. And I mean, he wasn't in the original Cult, but he is now. And except they can't play anywhere because of COVID. But yeah. My daughter always says I've got four kids, not three kids, because he's the same way, man. This guy is just like so into the tweaky geeky stuff.
Oh yeah, you gotta have fun with life. You can't take it too serious.
Oh really? Keep reminding me of that, because I do.
So yeah, our next question: do you have a favorite scene or joke from Wayne's World?
Taking a drink of delicious coffee there. If I had to say my favorite scene, oh boy, you know, I'm going to confess something right now.
Okay.
You're not going to believe this, but I saw, the last time I saw Wayne's World was when we had the opening at the Village Theater in Westwood in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
And that was 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And because I don't watch it, you know, I don't watch any of my old movies. I think that I don't watch them because, I don't know, I feel like I don't want to go backwards in time. I just want to go forward, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But if I had to pick a scene, I really love Dana doing Foxy Lady.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and I really love it when the wonderful stunt woman we had doubling for Laura Flint Boyle hits the car on the bike.
Oh, yeah, that was great. Hi, Wayne. Hi. Yeah.
Hi, Wayne. And you know what? Mike, when we finished the movie, he said that scene wasn't funny and I should cut it out. And since then, he's been kind enough to retract that sentiment.
Well, that's good.
I mean,
yeah,
especially since her career had taken off after that. I mean, she got huge.
She did?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, she's not working that much now, but...
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, but she's a sweetheart of a girl, and I'm glad we were able to keep that joke, because I love it.
Oh.
And I also love the scene... Listen to me, it's all coming back to me now. The scene where the cop pulls over Rob Lowe and puts on the vinyl glove.
Oh,
yes.
That's the best. Yeah. Officer Koharski, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's his name, yeah. Oh, very good, very good. You guys are tweaky geeky.
I told you, it's one of our favorite movies. I think I've watched it.
Wow.
I watch it probably once a month, I'm not going to lie.
Oh my God, you're sicko.
I know. I put it on the background while I'm working, and yes.
Oh.
It's one of those
things.
Well,
if it makes you happy, it makes me happy.
Yeah, oh, I love it. So, our other host, Matt, he can't be here, but he did have a question of what was the craziest thing that happened on set while you were filming Wayne's World? Because I know it was only shot in 34 days, which is pretty crazy too. So
yeah, it was 34 days. It was really fast. The craziest thing that happened. Well, here's my theory when I'm shooting, and it's always proven to be right for me, and that is that if the crew and everybody in the scene cracks up while you're shooting it, it's not going to be funny on film.
Yeah.
And so basically I don't laugh very much in life. Like I should never have been making comedies because I'm more, much more serious than that. I'm more of a suburbia type movie person, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. But somehow I got trapped in this comedy thing, but you know, when people laugh on the set, I get worried. And so luckily nobody laughed that much when we were shooting. I forgot what the hell question you asked me. What was it?
What was the craziest thing that happened on set?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's you know what? Here's one thing that was hilarious. Mike, okay, he's got such a good heart, Mike Myers does. I know there's all this shit in the world about how me and him don't get along and all that. Yeah. We got along great when we were shooting the movie. We just didn't agree at the end when he wanted me to cut a bunch of stuff out. But in general, Mike is a wonderful person. And we had this DP, Theo van der Sant, from the Netherlands, who was really a great shooter. And he sometimes would take a long time to light something, you know, and the director and the cinematographer kind of vie or fight or argue over how much time each one of us gets, you know. They have to light the set. If it takes too long, I don't get enough time to shoot the actors, you know. Anyway, so Mike, what he would do to make everybody stop being nervous is he would do imitations of people while Theo was lighting. And one time he was it was at night, and Mike goes, "You all sit still. You don't move. I'm going to light every single leaf on every single tree on the street." You know? And then he would put up, Mike would put on my leather jacket and imitate me. I have to wear shades when I'm shooting at night because of the lights.
Yeah.
So he'd put on my shades, put on my black leather jacket, stick his ass out, and run around going, "Okay, action! Caught, you stupid shit. Ah."
You sound like my boss.
I'm sorry to hear that.
No, I'm just kidding. My boss is delightful. So.
Yeah.
He has to say that.
Clean that one up.
So the question, I guess, our next question would be, if they ever called you to do Wayne's World 3, would you say yes?
It would really depend on the script. And actually, recently, I had occasion to speak to both Mike and Dana, and that question came up because I always get emails from people who have these whack ideas about what Wayne's World 3 should be, right?
Yeah.
And most of the time it's Wayne and Garth both are married and they have children, and they have each have a son, and the son that looks just like them, so they're little kids, and that's the Wayne's World 3.
Yeah.
You know, but the fact of the matter is I don't have any say about whether or not there's a Wayne's World 3. Paramount owns the rights, and
yeah,
they would be the only ones that could do it. And you know, I think Mike and Dana have both moved on, and sometimes I even get the feeling that they don't want that movie to be their legacy.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I mean, with Shrek, and you know, I don't know what would you call like the definitive Dana Carvey movie, but with Shrek, I mean, Mike can just, he can do whatever
he
wants.
Yeah, he's got all kinds of legacy going on with Shrek and Austin Powers and, you know,
course,
whatever
yeah.
else. But I think Dana better resign himself that he's Garth and get it the hell over with, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny because we, you know, had ideas too. And my thought was always that Garth would have been huge in like the dot-com sort of millionaire stuff. And I'm like, that's where I would have wanted to take it. So Garth is like super successful, and then they'd have to go, and you know, because he got into the internet early and made his millions. So you know,
that's
Wayne's
really
trying to get the show
idea.
Back together.
Yeah. I mean, look, he made the mechanical hand, you know, and he had to have the licorice dispenser coming down. So he.
Oh yeah.
I know. He was the techie guy back then when there was no digital tech, you know, or we didn't use it like we do now. But, yeah, you're right. That's totally his personality.
Yeah.
That's where I would have gone, because what you're talking about, they just remade Bill and Ted, and that's the idea that they used. So that it was their
kids. Oh, really?
And,
yeah.
I mean, I knew they redid Bill and Ted. You mean they had sons?
They had daughters,
actually.
Oh, trying to be politically correct.
Yeah.
How is that movie? Did you see it?
I did. I saw it on the day it came out, and I liked it. It had a lot of heart, which I think was missing from the second film. And this one, it touched on a lot of notes, and they went back in time to get musicians. Like, they got Louis Armstrong and Jimi Hendrix and, I think, Amadeus Mozart. So they were putting together the world's greatest band. It was interesting. It had a lot of fun pieces to it.
Yeah, I saw an ad for it, and I'm looking at it closely, and I'm going, is that really Keanu? And is that really Alex? What the hell, you know? But they really used them in the movie, right?
Yeah, and honestly, Alex Winter steals the show. He's so good. Like, it's such a reduced Keanu, and it's and I think they did that on purpose, because they're like, we don't want John Wick in this movie, so... You know, but he is always top notch. We're huge fans.
Yeah.
So, moving on from Wayne's World, you know, you've worked with some of the biggest comedic names and SNL alum in the world. Are they easy to work with? Are they giant personalities that you got to wrangle in?
Well,
you mean far?
You know, each one is different. You know, but there is a common thing that I noticed while working on Saturday Night Live, and that is that Lorne sets it up so that all of the writers and players are in this kind of subtle but vicious competition, you know, to make Lorne laugh.
Yeah.
And he's very, I don't know, Lorne's a very unique person. I knew him before Saturday Night Live ever was formed. He was excuse me, a friend back in 1973. And you know, he's done an amazing thing in his life, and it was always the most important thing to him, Saturday Night Live. But there is a lot of negativity and backstory. I describe it as a snake pit. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. But from that kind of dissension comes comedy, believe it or not. You know. Like all famous comedian teams, you know, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis and Abbott Costello and Laurel and Hardy and the fucking Three Stooges. Can I swear? I'm sorry.
Oh, we're not politically correct or anything. You can say whatever you want on this show. We don't.
Okay.
We don't censor. We're not for kids, so you're good.
All those guys, they didn't get along with each other. People don't know that, you know. But what makes them funny somehow is the fact that they disagree, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like a family. We all disagree, but sometimes that's the funniest stuff is when family disagrees.
Exactly.
Well, what do they say? Conflict breeds art?
Oh, very good. I'm going to get that tattoo.
Nice.
On my forehead.
On your forehead. Yeah, nice. So moving with some of the people that you've worked with individually, you know, we definitely got to ask, what was it like to work with the late, great Chris Farley?
Oh, that was one of the highlights of my career, working with Chris Farley. You know, he was a total delight. And again, see, David Spade and Chris Farley together, like I still have a recording because it was on my you know, in the voicemail back in the day when mm-hmm. they had like little tapes you put in. So I have that little tape from David Spade calling me up one day during the shoot saying, "You are busting my comedy balls. You are not representing me well in this movie. You are not allowing me to be the wine, you know?"
Yeah.
And that's, you know, look at David. He's a whiner, you know? Him yeah. and Rob Schneider, the pain in the ass. But that's what they are in life, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Good thing we have the First Amendment here. These guys would be up my ass. anyway... the fact of the matter is, I loved working with Chris, and there was a little competition going on there just because that's the way Lorne teaches these guys.
Yeah.
But Farley, when we were shooting, that guy was just squeaky clean. He was not using any drugs. He would ask me sometimes, "Can I leave the set early today because I need to go to an AA meeting?" He was straight as an arrow. And I'm really good at spotting drugs because I've got a lot of friends and family that are experts on it.
Yeah.
And you know, I can always tell if somebody's loaded. Chris was never stoned when we were shooting. However, when I went back, I had to go back to New York to do the ADR. You guys know what ADR is, right?
I'm not familiar with it, no.
Okay, it's the... dialogue replacement when you're done with the movie and somebody's line got too low or screwed up, they'll have you come in and do the voiceover and lip sync it, right?
Yeah.
ADR. I think it's automatic dialogue replacement or something like that. Anyway, so I had to go back to New York and do this in the studio, and he's an hour late. Chris is an hour late to come in. And finally he gets there and he comes in the door and he's like all sweaty and all disheveled, and I thought, what the hell? And he was stoned off his ass, and I thought, oh man, this is no bueno.
Yeah.
And when we were shooting, he actually took me aside one day and said to me, "I want to live like John Belushi, and I want to die like John Belushi."
Oh my
and
God.
I literally shoved him, and I said, "Stop that, you know, don't even think that way." I thought he was joking, but he did it.
Yeah.
And I used to be friends with Belushi, too. He was at my house 2 days before he passed away. But that was, you know, Farley's god was John Belushi.
that's
so crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
He was really big in the Chicago area here. They absolutely loved him. So many people that I know, you know, have fond memories of, "Oh, I served him at a restaurant," or anything like that. He was
right.
So great. You know, so it's always good to hear a good story about him. It's so tragic. I mean, between like guys like him and Phil Hartman, it's just like, you know, wow.
Exactly. It's bizarre. And I always say, even though I'm not a traditionally religious person, I always say God's in charge of life and death. You never know who's going to stay and who's going to go, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You don't know. Matter of fact, I got to tell you guys, I woke up in the night and I got this email from a guy in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me cry because he said that he was raised on suburbia and the decline, and he's 51 years old now.
Yeah.
And he has an illness. He wrote me another email, which I discovered it was a liver failure illness, and he's got kids and everything. And he said before he died he wanted to thank me for the movies I've done, and I just started crying, you know.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's heavy stuff, man.
Oh, yeah, I mean, directing...
You know, there's such a deep connection to
yeah.
this. I just watched The Decline, the first and the second part, last night in preparation for this. That first one, that was emotional. So
yeah.
I can understand.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter always says to me, "Mom, you don't know who you are." Because, see, I don't go on all the social media sites or anything, because I did in the beginning, but then I got overwhelmed with it, you know? Like, I'm not famous like Madonna famous or something, you know what I mean? But I'm well known among a certain group of people, and there's a lot of those people, and actually more and more coming up lately that, you know, I get these emails that go, oh my God, you did Wayne's World and The Decline of Western Civilization and Suburbia. But I don't sit around and going, gee, I'm really cool. Look what I did. I can't get my brain around that, you know? Because I was just trying to, you know, make a living, to be honest with you.
Well, you did a great job making a living because, yeah, I mean, you've made some of the most iconic stuff that, you know, we're in our mid to late 30s, and, I mean, you had a big part of my teenage middle school years, pretty much. I mean, with Wayne's World and The Little Rascals and the Beverly Hillbillies. I mean, those were movies I watched a lot growing up, so.
I wish I knew how to promote myself better. If anybody out there knows how to promote me, let me know. But I'm such a punk rocker at heart that I always feel a little sleazy when I start promoting myself. You know what I mean?
Oh, definitely.
And it's like selling out or something. And my daughter, Anna Fox, she goes, Mom, it's not selling out anymore. Everybody does it. Just go out there and make the most of it. And I'm like, nah, I'd rather rebuild my garage.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I have to force myself to, like, promote me, but you got to do it sometimes.
I mean, some people are shamelessly good at it, And, you know, I'm not going to mention any names, Kardashian. But anyway, some people do it, and it's really easy, but I can't do it. I can't even sell... I barely could sell the Decline DVDs, and I got to sell clothing for the Decline because I've got this, you know, trademark and everything.
Yeah.
And I just feel a little like unpunk rock to go making money on that stuff, you know.
Oh yeah, but yeah, I mean that's everything. Oh, it looks like, hold on 1 second. It looks like Justin dropped his call, so. I'm going to call him back, but we'll keep talking while I'm calling him back.
Do you want to get him back? Or did he hang up because I said something wrong?
He didn't hang up. He just texted me and goes, oh, no, my call dropped. So let me try to get him back in real quick.
Yeah, go ahead, get him back.
All right.
Hey, Justin.
Everybody there?
I'm here.
Okay, we got him.
Oh, Justin, I thought you hung up because I said something wrong.
No, I appreciate your take on being punk rock culture and all that. It's funny because I'm a metalhead, so we value integrity, and it's one of those things where it's like, I totally get it, you know, and that's like us. We're not doing this because we want to get rich. We're doing this because we enjoy something and we want to honor it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, how about that Gene Simmons? He's a metalhead and he sure does sell a lot of shit.
Oh yeah.
I never got Kiss. I just don't get the music. Like, it looks great on paper, but I just don't get it. But, I mean, you cannot convince me Beth or Love Gun are a good song. I'm sorry.
That's
that
funny.
Makes me a jerk. I'm just sorry.
No, well, they've got a huge audience, so they don't need you.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I was enjoying last night watching part two of The Decline of Western Civilization, and Dave Mustaine from Megadeth just absolutely owned it. And Lemmy, oh my God, was he charismatic. He's just standing there, and I'm like, I want to hear everything that he has to say. Was so
God bless
cool.
Lemmy.
Yeah.
Well, it was supposed to be Guns N' Roses closing up that movie, but their manager ditched out the day before the shoot, that bastard. And so I had to scramble, and I knew Dave because I had done a couple videos with him. I did Wake Up Dead and some other video. I forgot. Shocker. I can't remember. Anyway, I got Dave to step in and close the movie because I was having a little bit of tension with the producers because I didn't really want to make it so much about the fluffy hair guys, you know.
Oh, thank God. Yeah.
Well, I really would. If it would have been me, it would have been more of a thrash metal movie, you know, but because that's just what I like. But I mean, I like some of the hair bands. You know, I like Faster Pussycat and that. But they're a little sing-songy for me, and of course the look has come to be like right now they've got this funny Jack in the Box commercial or something with all these guys that look like the Twisted Sister dude, you know?
And it's funny too, because that's around the time when Wayne's World came out that I was formulating what I like to listen to, and that's when I discovered Metallica and Megadeth, and you know, to a later point, like I went backwards and I'm like, oh, I like Black Sabbath, I like Led Zeppelin.
Oh, really? Yeah. You know?
And it's funny because the biggest musical inspirations in my life are metal and progressive rock, which are somewhat similar, but just not even close.
Prog rock. So, did you know I did a movie called We Sold Ourselves for Rock and Roll, which was the Ozfest tour? Did you know I did that movie?
I know now.
It didn't get released, so hardly anybody knows about it, because Sharon Osbourne said she had the rights to the music, and so I made the movie. I spent 3 years on it, and I mean, it's a great movie. It had Sabbath and
all original
members: Sabbath, Slayer, Primus, Rob Zombie, Static X, Slipknot. Now, all these awesome bands, but I never got released because Sharon jibed me and said she had the rights. And afterwards, you know, the bands, I'm thinking they don't like her that much because she couldn't get the rights, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
Well, that's the thing, like three or four of those bands that you mentioned, some of the members are not even alive anymore. So it's like, that would have been so amazing.
Static X, you know, like, guy.
Exactly. Yeah. I think at Ozfest, I saw Drowning Pool, and they died like 2 weeks later.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, on the Ozfest, they go out, and everybody has to have their own tour bus, and they don't get paid. A lot of them don't get paid. Only the top two or three acts get paid.
Oh, man.
And they do it just to promote their new album or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they gave us lunch tickets. That was it.
Wow. Yeah, I was not aware of that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Wow, it's really kind of a yeoman thing to do then, right? To be that traveling band. Actually, that makes a lot more sense now when talking about the decline of Western civilization, where those hair bands were trying to leech off of the women for money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was just what you did back then. And women went along with the program, so you can't blame just the guys, you know. That was a weird day. I mean, good Lord, my ex-boyfriend, who was in this band called the Joneses, when I split up with him because he was doing too many drugs, he was friends with Nikki Sixx. Matter of fact, he gave the crew their look. John James is his name, and he had that Motley Crue look before they did. So Nikki copied his look. But anyway, after we broke up, the bastard went and set my 16-year-old daughter up with Nikki Sixx.
Oh, no.
Swear to God. I mean, I was just devastated, you know, because, I mean, Nikki had to come over here and sit down in my living room, and because I said to my daughter, you're not going out with anybody. You're not 18 yet, and unless they meet the mom. So the guy comes over here, sits down in the living room, and he goes, I don't like something you said about me. I said, what'd I say? He goes, you didn't want your daughter going out with a 40-year-old heroin addict. I said, oh, gosh, excuse me, Nikki, how old are you? Because we all know you're a heroin addict.
Oh, wow.
That is so badass.
Yeah. Oh, wow, yeah. I couldn't even imagine.
I've had all kinds of shit like that in my life, you know. But it was my own fault because I was still going out to clubs when my daughter was coming of age, where she would go out to clubs, and then we would be at the same club, and I would feel ridiculous there, and she would feel, I better put out my cigarette and hide my drink, you know? It was uncomfortable time. I should have stayed home.
I can imagine, yeah. That's a little off.
Yeah, you don't want your mom at the club you're at, you know?
Yeah,
What's interesting... What's interesting for music now for you? So just since we're still on that vein, like, what are you listening to now?
Well, you know, you get to a point in life, and I said this to him, I met my boyfriend of 22 years on The Decline Part 3. He was a gutter punk, and probably always will be. And so we've been together all this time, and I have to listen, like, he plays guitar so loud. He's got this whole studio set up. He's a fucking homeless when I met him, okay? We've been together for 22 years.
Wow.
But he's a industrial rock kind of person, you know? And he plays really, he's really, really a good guitar player. And he's got excellent equipment down there and everything. But I said to him the other day, I said, how come, you know, we stopped going to concerts? Well, now you can't go to concert because there aren't any.
Yeah.
But just before that happened, before COVID, I said, how come we don't go to concerts anymore? And he goes, well, once you've been on the Ozfest and you went to 30 cities and you watched the same 10 bands every night, you kind of feel like you did it, you know? So as far as what I listen to now, I have to listen to his guitar down in the studio a lot. And then when I start to get a little frazzled, I will listen to some Japanese Zen meditation music. Or I will throw on Temple of the Dog or some of those old, you know, kind
wow.
of. I love the, Chris Cornell so much, my favorite voice. I would throw on some old albums like that, you know.
Oh, nice.
You and I are kindred spirits, because I was cooking last night and I had Chris Cornell on, and I was just listening to his cover of Nothing Compares. I love the Prince one too, but man, that is just, that is an immortal song.
Uh-huh, yes, and his voice is just, I don't know why, it just cuts to my heart, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So,
I know we got off track a little bit, Justin, I'm sorry. I just
no,
really
you're fine. It's not off
track. Someone cool about music.
I'm listening to all these great stories. I'm just like, and who, you know, doing the Wayne's World. Who else? Who else was there?
Who else did your daughter go out with?
Yeah, yeah, like,
oh no. She did. She went out with, it wasn't MC Hammer, but it was one of those guys, and she's like, all he's doing is cocaine, Mom. What should I do? You know? Stop going out with these idiots. No, it was Rick James. It was Rick James.
Oh, okay, wow.
My daughter went out with Rick James.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every time I see Rick James, I just think of
it. It's like, really, do I need to worry about this shit, you know?
Yeah, I could imagine so.
This is like when rock and roll bites you in the ass, you know?
Yeah. So we wanted, yeah, just to bring it back, because we got a couple of questions that we wanted to talk about before we wrap up. So going back to the movie side of the world, you know, you got to work with Jim Varney, who another late great one. What was it like to work with him, since he was like a classically trained actor doing comedies?
Oh, yeah, he's a Shakespearean trained actor. And also, I think people don't know about Jim is that he was he had a genius IQ, but he played a dumb guy, you know what I mean?
Oh,
so
yeah.
People never associated him with classic actor training or high IQ. But he was wonderful to work with. I mean, God, talk about a pro. You know, there's certain actors that just, you let them do whatever they're going to do because they know best. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like Brad Dourif is one of those kind of guys.
Oh, wow.
In this movie, Senseless, I did with the that shithead Weinstein people.
It's okay. It's definitely okay to say that at that point, because he will never get out of jail.
Oh, yeah, right? They tried to rewrite the ending of the movie I was working on. It's called Senseless with Marlon Wayans and David Spade. You know, and my line now is, well, Harvey, I guess you might rot in jail. See if you can rewrite that ending, mother load, huh?
Nice.
It was miserable working with them. But there, you know, there's Jim, and then the Cloris Leachman was in the Hillbillies, and Lily Tomlin. That was like the third time I'd worked with Lily. And, you know, I started out my whole career working with Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
It's just like, I always say God felt bad for me for having such a shitty childhood that he put all these really talented, hilarious actors in my life and tried to cheer me up is what it was. That's my explanation. Because there's no other explanation. Why in the world did I end up working with such brilliant actors. It's I feel very, very privileged, you know.
Yeah, because I mean, it's interesting reading your childhood and stuff. I was reading that your father owned a traveling carnival.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's pretty interesting just in itself, so I couldn't even imagine growing
up
in that.
Well, I'm making a documentary about it,
yeah.
And as soon as I get that building over there converted into an editing room, I'm going to keep on working on it. But, yeah, I have a very interesting younger life story, you know, and...
Oh, yeah.
And I think, and basically... I'm also working on a project. Well, I haven't really told anybody about it yet because I'm not done with it, but I'm working on a project about... I'm writing a book about my movie career. All right, I said
it.
Oh,
wow. Oh, wow, yeah, definitely. I mean...
But you're the only ones I've said it to. And it's almost done. And so... And there's a lot of, I think, insightful lessons in there for young filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And... a lot of revealing truths about the business, because basically Hollywood does suck.
Yeah, you know? No, I've definitely heard the stories and things like that, and you know, and then sometimes just personal stuff. When I've met actors and producers and stuff in real life, you're like, you're not how you portray yourself in front of everybody else. You're kind of an asshole.
Exactly, you know, and It's a business I discovered after so many years that, you know, you don't really have any friends in Hollywood, you know, because they'll all cop out on you. They'll all ditch you and betray you. Everyone will, just
yeah.
For that fame and glory and money. They'll be not true friends, you know. And I don't know. I mean, I guess I could have turned out bitter, but I'm not bitter. I'm just like, whatever, you guys go ahead and beat your head against the wall and keep trying to make movies, because I don't basically give a shit.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Maybe that's what gives you the best perspective on this, is because you have that sort of punk rock attitude towards it.
Well, that's the best thing about punk rock, and it's the thing that attracted me to it in the very beginning in the late 70s, was stop worrying about all the little shit. Just forget it, you know, because you can't do anything about it anyway, you know. And it's been a lifestyle that I've lived since then, which is I'm not gonna let other people bother me and screw up my brain, because I don't give a shit, you know. You guys go be dicks, I don't care.
Nice. I like the attitude, because that's the attitude I have in life. So that's probably why we're not big and famous yet. So. But,
well, I hope we covered Wayne's World enough for you.
Oh, I'm enjoying listening to your stories. I can listen to you talk all day with these stories, because it's like you're telling us stuff I never even would have imagined. So tell me more.
I got a lot of secrets, but I'm about ready to spill the beans.
I have a question. Just going back to the people that you've worked with.
Yeah.
Out of everybody that you've worked with, I have heard that Albert Brooks is probably the funniest human alive. Is that true?
I have to say that Albert is a very unique person, and I worked with Albert after I worked with Richard Pryor. Okay, so if I had to compare those two guys, you know, they're both profoundly intelligent, profoundly hilarious and unique and groundbreaking. Richard would come out on top for me. Albert is, he's so neurotic that it's hard to be with him, you know?
Yeah.
I was in the same room with Albert Brooks for about 4 years, and I almost went insane. And I was producing for him, so I had to, like, you know, run around and try and accommodate all of his whack ideas, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, basically I'm pissed at Albert. Let me just cop to it right now, because when we were shooting Real Life, which is, see, I taught Albert how to make movies.
Yeah.
Lauren called me up and said, you know, I got this really funny guy. He doesn't want to be a player. on Saturday Night Live, but he wants to make those short movies, so will you teach him how to make movies? So I did. And we did these short films on Saturday Night Live. I produced them, showed Albert how to put the camera over there and screw the lens in this way. And then I produced a feature film for Albert. And there was one day where my daughter was cast as a little tiny part, and she was so excited about it. And then at the last moment, she had her makeup on and everything. She was 10 years old. And at the last moment, Albert said, "I don't want to use her. I want to use that girl over there."
Oh, wow.
And so I had to tell my daughter to go home. And you know what? I can't get over that.
Yeah,
because there was no reason.
So, yeah.
There was no reason to do that to that kid. And the only good thing that came out of it is my daughter hates Hollywood as much as I do, because she's seen how bad it is, you know? And she doesn't want to be a director, even though she graduated from American Film Institute as a director. But she doesn't want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And that was good. So thank you, Albert, for being a dick.
Yeah, no, totally. Just got to cut you off for 1 second. Justin dropped again, so just let me add him back in, and then we'll probably wrap it up.
Yeah, I probably need to go pretty soon here before my guys burn the place down over there.
Yeah, don't worry. Just let me get him back again since
he
keeps dropping off. You keep offending him with these things.
I guess I'm saying the wrong thing.
Yeah, hold on one second. All right, we got Justin back again. So
I won't make you repeat all that, but
Justin reinvented.
Yeah, that's just my screen name there, my little alter ego. we're gonna start wrapping it up here, Penelope. We gotta say thank you so much for these great stories. I mean, I'm definitely gonna read your book when it comes out, because just listening to you talk, I'm like, you know, I keep going, who else was there? What else happened?
Yeah, it's been quite a ride, I'll tell you. I mean, I've been in the film business since I met Richard Pryor in 1973 or so. And, you know, it's been a real roller coaster ride, and I think anybody in their right mind would have quit a long time ago. But, you know, when I did Wayne's World, I got stuck in this comedy thing, and then they kept paying me all this money, and I never could make the movies I wanted to make, but I said, what the hell, I'll just take the money. So, you know, now I got a shitload of money, but basically at heart I'm a punk rocker and I don't even know what to spend it on.
Well, I thank you for I have to thank you for taking the money, because you made some of the greatest movies that I love in life, so I thank you for that.
That's so sweet. Thank you so much, you guys.
Yeah, and just the generosity with your time and your stories, and just like being able to just chat with you about cool stuff like music and all that after seeing some of the stuff you put out there. I really, really appreciate that.
Oh, well, I appreciate you guys including me in your show, and I hope people have fun listening.
I can imagine they will, because these stories have been phenomenal. So, yeah, thank you again for taking the time to talk to us.
All right, well, I want you guys to party on now.
party on, Penelope.
All right. You take care.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye.